this is Jim Fetzer sitting in for Daniel here with the Power Hour Nation and simulcasting on Revolution Radio, where my show, The Raw Deal, is normally heard at the same time on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Let me mention to one and all, both audiences, the call-in number for the final segment of the show after the break at the bottom of the hour is 844-769-2944. I repeat, call-in number for the final segment of the show, 844-769-2944, about any of the issues we're dealing with here or some other matter about which you'd like to get something off your chest and address to me. I will be glad to hear from you after the final break of the show at the bottom of the hour. Meanwhile, there's an absolutely fascinating piece published about, if you still believe the mainstream narrative on COVID, then answer these questions. I think this is simply excellent. Explain how they pulled the COVID Act 2020 legislation together in a matter of days, despite the act being several hundred pages long. We had a similar phenomenon, by the way, after 9/11 with the Patriot Act, which had been sitting on the shelf. It was thousands of pages long in order to find the right occasion, where they created the occasion in order to introduce the Patriot Act and deprive us of liberty under the Constitution. Explain why they have completely changed normal practice and used criteria like death for any reason within 28 days of a positive test to classify as a COVID-19 test. Explain why they banned autopsies of anyone dying from or with COVID-19. Explain why they changed the law to allow any practitioner to diagnose COVID through observation alone, even if it were done through video consultation. Explain why undertakers have seen no difference in burials or cremations. Explain how all-cause mortality is at an all-time low. Explain how millions of protesters across the globe aren't getting sick with COVID. Explain how this is the only crisis that needs an advertising campaign paired with a constant barrage of repetitive brainwashing propaganda on TV and in the streets. Explain how hundreds of thousands of people marched to the streets of London for an afternoon last month, but it wasn't what shown on any American TV channel or reported in the mainstream press. Explain how thousands were yelling, "Shame on you," outside the BBC headquarters in London, Manchester, and Cardiff last Saturday, but it wasn't shown in the United States on television. Explain how all those who are wearing the masks and following the rules are the only ones who are catching COVID. Explain how the creator of the PCR amplification tool is on record for stating that the PCR was not designed as a test for infectious diseases. Explain why they are using the PCR to diagnose an infectious disease. Explain why the concern has been changed from COVID deaths to hospitalizations to COVID infections to COVID cases, which, of course, are merely positive tests on a test that's 98% unreliable. Explain how the anti-vaxxers are being blamed for the rise in cases, when the only people who could possibly be contributing to the statistics are people who are getting the test in the first place. Explain why the hospitals were emptier than normal during the height of the pandemic. Explain why whistleblowers are reporting the hospitals are not filling up with vaccine adverse reactions, but the mainstream media is not reporting it. Explain why kids need to be vaccinated when, by your own definitions, COVID isn't dangerous to children. Explain, if all the vulnerable people have already been vaccinated, Why do all the healthy people need to be vaccinated if you're already protected by your own vaccine? And the recovery rate was already 99.96% without it. Explain why the average age of death with COVID, 82.4, is higher than the average age of death without it, 81.5. Explain how you could be banned from Facebook and Twitter for sharing official government links. Explain why there are several class actions in progress taking governments across the globe to court for crimes against humanity, but there is zero mainstream coverage. Explain how the flu disappeared but has been replaced with something that has exactly the same symptoms. Explain why they downgraded COVID-19 from a high consequential infectious disease days before they declared a pandemic. Explain why most government leaders are reading from the same script. Explain how all the things you are laughing at us for talking about last year are now becoming a reality this, such as vaccine passports and mass surveillance. Explain why we have all the answers, but you have none. Meanwhile, absolutely true, there were some 30 million cases of the flu last year, but this year less than 2,000. So what happened with that vast number of millions of cases of the flu? Did the flu just disappear? No, it turned into COVID. They simply reclassified those who had the flu as persons who had COVID. Meanwhile, Israel appears to be turning up the heat against Iran. Fire and explosion hit Iran steel factory in third major incident in 5 days, coming from Zero Hedge, which I recommend is a highly reliable source. A large fire broke out Saturday night at a steel factory in the southeast city of Zarand in Iran. It's the latest in a mysterious string of blasts and accidental blazes at sensitive sites to beset the Islamic Republic, raising questions of possible Israeli sabotage akin to what happened a year ago in the summer of 2020. Frankly, I have no doubt about it. The governor of Zarand told the Iranian Fars News Service that no injuries were caused in the incident and that it was under control, reported the Jerusalem Post. The incident was reportedly caused by the sudden overflow of molten material from the blast furnace, with the governor stressing no explosion occurred, but some early videos showed otherwise. Social media show a sizable blaze, which appears to have triggered a significant explosion, resulting in debris and what looks like molten steel flying into the air. If it's molten, it would be iron, of course, not steel, since they would separate the iron and the carbon, which together form steel. Even if Iran suspects Israel is behind some of these incidents, Tehran officials are likely reluctant to go public with accusations, given negotiators are reported to be on the cusp of renewing the nuclear deal in Vienna, and the country is gearing up to vote for a new president this month to replace Rouhani, who, in my judgment, has done an excellent job in the office. Israel has vowed to thwart the deal by any means possible, with embattled Prime Minister Netanyahu, who appears to be on the way out, verbalizing he's willing to consider any level of action, even if it were to cause friction with the United States. There are further reports of other fires afflicting oil facilities throughout the country. Several oil facility fires have occurred in Iran's southwestern Avaz region during the past 48 hours. One Middle East source reviewed the recent string of fires and explosions hitting key Iranian assets as follows. 3 days earlier, a major fire tore through the Tehran Oil Refining Company on the outskirts of the capital. Another explosion followed by a fire sank Iran's largest naval vessel in the Sea of Oman on June 2nd. On May 23rd, 9 persons were injured in another blast at a plant producing explosive materials in central Iran. 3 days later, a pipeline explosion at a petrochemical complex near Iran's Gulf Coast left one dead. And we have plenty of photos and so forth of the vessel on fire as it sank. We also have plenty of photos of the oil refinery fire in Tehran. There are those who seek to explain it away, but it appears to be no accident, no coincidence all this is happening. I am convinced, by the way, that the reason Israel or the Zionists or the Israeli government went all in for Joe Biden was because they were certain he would not put up a protest when they undertook these actions against Iran. Trump would never have stood for it, in my opinion. Meanwhile, Governor DeSantis of Florida, whom I have heretofore admired virtually without qualification, has now signed a law banning criticism of Israel, which has vast First Amendment ramifications. This seriously compromises him, in my estimation, as a candidate for, say, the Republican nomination for president in 2024, should Donald Trump choose not to run. DeSantis championed and signed a bill that bans criticism of Israel. 2019 HB 741 bans any speech in the public school systems of Florida deemed to be making mendacious, dehumanizing, demonizing, or stereotypical allegations about Jews or the power of Jews as a collective, such as the myth of a world Jewish conspiracy or of Jews controlling the media, economy, government, or other societal institutions. Well, the first part, of course, sounds like a kind of a traditional anti-Semitism bill. But the second part, controlling the media, economy, government of other societal institutions, would that include Hollywood? A Jewish columnist was quite cheerful about Jews controlling Hollywood. I myself have reported many times about having, you know, panels of 100 executives from CNN, every one of whom is a dual U.S. Israeli citizen. Another panel from NBC, 100 executives, every one of whom is a dual U.S. Israeli citizen. A third panel from the New York Times, of 100 executives, every one of which is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. Would I, therefore, in pointing out these facts of the matter, which imply that Israelis who are Jews control the media in the United States, run afoul of this law? House Bill 741 also bans applying a double standard to Israel by requiring behavior of Israel that is not expected or demanded of any other democratic nation, or focusing peace or human rights investigations only on Israel. Why would anyone even think such a thing were the case? Israel has been the foremost violator of human rights the world has seen in the last 100 years. I mean, it's completely outrageous. Since the founding of Israel in 1947-48, there's been ongoing serious problems with the Israeli treatment of the Palestinians. This is a major human rights issue of the 20th century. Now it's extending into the 21st. So I think DeSantis is simply wrong about this, 100% wrong, and I find it embarrassing. Powerful pro-Israel lobbying organization often push similar measures to shut down criticism of Israel, regardless of the political implication of the nation's reputation in America and across the world. Florida's law narrowly identifies and essentially criminalizes specific political speech in public places and is therefore nakedly unconstitutional. There is no reason to think this law has ever been enforced on any campus. It would virtually instantly be overthrown by courts that recognize its gross violation of the First Amendment. Let me add, the problem with unconstitutional measures like this is the mischief that occurs between the time they're promulgated, as this has just been passed in Florida, and the time they're eventually held to account and ruled to be unconstitutional by the Supreme Court, which can take years. Meanwhile, Governor Abbott of Texas, another state I have esteem for the manner in which it's handled the alleged coronavirus pandemic, signs anti-BDS legislation into law. Action signals Texas' strong support for Israel. Governor Greg Abbott today signed into law House Bill 89, known as the anti-BDS bill, which prohibits all state agencies from contracting with and certain public funds from investing in companies that boycott Israel. The governor hosted the bill signing at the Jewish Community Center in Austin, where today also marks Israel's Independence Day. This is very bad. As Israel's number one trading partner in the United States, Texas is proud to reaffirm its support for the people of Israel, and we will continue to build on our historic partnership. Anti-Israel policies are anti-Texas policies, and we will not tolerate such actions against an important allies. The bill, authored by Representative Phil King, prohibits the state of Texas from conducting business with companies involved in the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against Israel. After the bill becomes law, it ensures certain public funds are not invested in any entities participating in this movement. Additionally, state contracts will only be given to verified businesses to guarantee that Texas maintains a strong and supportive relationship with Israel. Meanwhile, the Biden administration is promising ironclad support for whoever leads Israel, where the opposition coalition formed on Wednesday could bring an end to Bibi Netanyahu's 12-year reign. The United States said Thursday that its ironclad support remain in place for whoever leads Israel, with a coalition of opposition parties from across a political spectrum seeking to oust Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu after more than a decade in power. A group of eight parties, including some unlikely political allies, such as United Arab List, reached an agreement on Wednesday to form a new coalition government. It appears that is going to happen. Wednesday's announcement does not immediately end Netanyahu's grip on power, as lawmakers will need to vote on the deal, which is expected this week. While Netanyahu remains at the prime minister's residence in Jerusalem, he's likely to deploy every card at his disposal to make the new administration fail before it has even begun. He's expected to continue his attempts to persuade lawmakers to defect so that Lapid and Bennett do not have a majority, 61 seats, in the 120-seat Knesset. Meanwhile, even though I disagree with Noam Chomsky's on many issues, in this regard, I agree 100% quoting him. When Israelis in the occupied territories now claim they have to defend themselves, they are defending themselves in the sense that any military occupier has to defend itself against the population they are crushing. You can't defend yourself when you're militarily occupying someone else's land. That's not defense. Call it what it's like. It's not defense. Let me add, by the way, since we're coming up to the break, the number to call in for anyone who has any questions, 844-769-2944. 844-769-2944. Before we get to the break, let me mention that my petition for the Wisconsin Supreme Court in my Sandy Hook lawsuit is moving forward, where it was initially rejected by the court as having been submitted in an untimely fashion, but where my attorney submitted a correction to point out that it had been perfectly timely, and the Supreme Court reversed itself. The key issue has to do with my being denied the opportunity to defend myself from the allegation that I had made a false allegation about the authenticity of a death certificate by producing all the evidence that Sandy Hook had been a FEMA exercise where no children were killed. Here from my petition to the court is the key passage. The circuit court at the outset of this case narrowly limited its focus, advising Fetzer that whether Sandy Hook occurred was beyond the scope of this action, stating unequivocally, quote, whether or not Sandy Hook ever happened or not is not relevant to this, the truthfulness of the accuracy of the death certificate. Now, I understand the defendant's overall theory in believing that it never happened, and I'm not going to take the bait and let this case go down that rabbit hole. The circuit court's limited view of the matter, further indicated by the court's refusal to read your book because it would not be appropriate for me to start educating myself about the larger controversy. But how can it be irrelevant when it states right on the death certificate that the death occurred in a public school at 12 Dickinson Drive in Sandy Hook, Fairfield, Connecticut, on 12/14/2020, the cause of death, multiple gunshot wounds. Since that's the declared state, the cause of death in the death certificate, how can, whether or not Sandy Hook ever happened, not be relevant to the truthfulness or the accuracy of the death certificate? In my opinion, this is not rocket science. I certainly want to believe that the Wisconsin Supreme Court can set the record straight and vindicate me by at the very least giving me the trial that I was denied when the court, the judge in this case, ruled by summary judgment. Call in right now after the break. You got the number. See you there.
In the world is this crazy Willard water?
It's a proprietary solution, and it's a water additive that was invented by my grandfather, Dr. John Willard, and hence the name Willard Water. Boosts a number of different things. We see most prominently that it's increasing the absorption, utilization, and storage of nutrients in the cells. So, for example, if people were to drink it, we see a big boost in B vitamin absorption, utilization. If you see it in plants, we see a big boost in their ability to absorb and retain fertilizers or nutrients in the soil. So we see with things like microbes. If you used a microbe on soil, for example, to replenish the soil, and you sprayed our Willard water on it, go through that replenishing cycle much faster.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at theparamall.com. That's theparamall.com.
If you eat your mammoth food on a semi-regular basis, you're probably getting better quality food and healthier for your body than you're eating now.
Your products are GMO-free. There's no added MSG and no chemical preservatives or high fructose corn syrup. And you also have gluten-free products as well.
We have a great variety of very high quality products.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now and buy from the good guys at theparamall.com. That's theparamall.com.
My husband is a welder by trade, but he grinds his welding product, and he doesn't wear a helmet or a mask to do that. And he had this cruddy stuff in his lungs, and it just wasn't going away. And I heard you one time talking about the Sarah enzyme for the lungs. And my goodness, I mean, he can breathe so much easier. And I don't hear that crud in his lungs. Thank you so very much.
To find out more about this product or others like it, go to our website at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Jay's standing by to take your call. Now more than ever, we need your support. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Thanks. Okay, remember the call-in line, 844-769-2944. You're welcome to call in any issue that's on your mind. I'm glad to hear it. I will have say a few more words about the lawsuit. It's fascinating, in my opinion. This was filed to try to keep people from downloading a copy of the book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, where I brought together 13 experts, including 5 other PhD professors. So there were 6 of the 13 were PhDs doing research, where we established that the school had been closed by 2008, that there were no students there, and that it was a 2-day FEMA exercise presented as mass murder to promote gun control. And this was an Obama orchestrated action. And, you know, it was quite a scam where we even discovered the manual for the event, which spells out the time it begins and it says, you know, one of the puzzling aspects about the many images that were broadcast from Newtown that day. There was a sign that said everyone must check in. There was pizza and bottled water available at the firehouse. There were many who were there wearing name tags on lanyards. There were parents bringing children to the scene. Well, think about it. No parent is going to bring a child to the scene of a child shooting massacre. I mean, that's just insane. Not only that, but it says right in the manual, everyone must check in with a controller upon arrival. They're going to get paid. And, of course, providing refreshments and restrooms is a standard part of a FEMA exercise. I spoke with police officers, for example, and said, have you ever heard of porta-potties being set up at a crime scene? And they thought it was a joke, right? Or a sign, everyone must check in. In fact, one of the brilliant developments of Wolfgang Halbig is that in pursuing his Freedom of Information Action requests against the state of Connecticut because he didn't respond when he simply wanted to learn what had happened at Sandy Hook, because so that in his role as a nationally recognized school safety expert, he could advise other school systems on what they should do in order to make sure it didn't happen to them, that he found that his initial phone calls weren't being answered, his FOIA requests weren't being responded to, and the next thing he knew, there were two detectives from a local precinct on his porch in a gated community in South Florida telling him they were there on behalf of the Connecticut State Police, and if he didn't stop asking questions about Sandy Hook, that he would be prosecuted. Well, not only is that absurd on its face, particularly given the purity of his motivation, but that really made him absolutely tenacious about it. Wolfgang is a bit of a bulldog. He even looks a bit like a bulldog. I would have traveled with Wolfgang in 2014 to Newtown, where we visited the Northwest Connecticut United Way, and where he was blocked from access to records that are supposed to be available to the public as a matter of law, where six or seven Newtown police officers blocked his way physically. I was right there witnessing this, where we went to the police department because three of the highest ranking officers had been involved in the Sandy Hook event. And they refused to meet with us. How bad is that? Where we then went over to where the school had been located, and it had all been reduced to dirt clods. And we went to the firehouse where most of the activity had been centered, and where the chief of police, who'd been among the very first to respond, refused again to meet with Wolfgang. It was all profoundly disturbing. In any case, I think this is outrageous as to what has happened here, in that my being denied the right to a defense is a crucial issue before the Supreme Court, in addition to several others, which I'll explain before I take the caller standing by, a regular caller to the Raw Deal on Revolution Radio, to wit that the court never found that I was negligent, that I'd done anything wrong, which is an element of the offense of which I was found guilty by a summary judgment without being allowed to present my defense. And where, in addition, I was subjected to a penalty for having allegedly affected a third party who called the plaintiff in this case, who describes himself as Leonard Posner, who the plaintiff argued I'd somehow been responsible for calling up Posner, even though they had no evidence she'd ever read my book, had any knowledge of me whatsoever, all completely ridiculous. And we're in the separate trial for damages only. It wasn't a trial on the issue of the authenticity of the death certificate. I was found guilty and awarded $450,000 as a punishment for what I would say was, you know, exposing what happened at Sandy Hook to the public, for which I'm being punished, and where they wanted to have a justification to restrict access to the book, which was banned by Amazon. Can you believe? I have been doing this again and again, bringing different groups of experts together to sort out what's really going on in these events that are so politically significant, not just Sandy Hook, but also the Boston bombing. That's a really straightforward one. Orlando and Dallas, more fabricated events. Charlottesville, elaborately orchestrated by the governor at the time, Terry McAuliffe, a buddy of Hillary Clinton, and the mayor of Charlottesville, where I was extremely disappointed that I could not get the faculty in the Department of History to take an interest. All the evidence I had that this had been a fabricated event, where I sent them videos showing the crash. There had been two or three different takes of the crash, two different individuals, two different drivers, that the young fellow, 20 years old, diagnosed schizophrenic, wasn't even driving the car. He took no interest at all, which perhaps in retrospect ought not to be surprising, since Philip Zelikow, who is the executive director of the 9/11 Commission and who has been proposed to be the executive director of a January 6th commission, is on the faculty in the Department of History, and where Philip Zelikow's area of specialization before he entered the government service was the creation and maintenance of public myths, M-Y-T-H-S, where I suspect that Philip Zelikow actually scripted 9/11. He completed a draft of the report a year before he shared it with any member of the staff. He would have been perfect for January 6th. Okay, I have a couple of callers standing by. Let's bring in Paul from California. Paul, join the conversation.
Hey, just wanted to say hi. Meanwhile, wherever you go, whatever network you're on,
Paul, have we got you?
I will call into your show. Hey, in light of your discussion of Gavin Newsom and the recall election out here, I just wanted to take this moment to announce my candidacy for governor of California, where my main campaign promise will be vote for me. An AR-15 will arrive in the mail with 1,000 rounds of ammunition, and you'll be instructed to use it against the coronavirus wherever you see it. So, therefore, we will, in some way, shape, or form, defeat this horrible coronavirus, which has disabled our state. Thank you very much.
So, your campaign slogan, Paul, is vote for me, get AR-15 free. Nice, nice. You're going to get a lot of support, Paul. You better have a pretty good stock. There are, of course, California is our most populous state. We'd be talking about millions upon millions who'd pick you up on that. You can stick around while I bring in William from Vermont. William, join the conversation.
Hello, James. Nice to speak to you, sir. The reason I'm calling, actually, is I wanted to talk to you about masks as a fomite. You know what I'm talking about?
I'm not sure I do. Go ahead and explain it.
Okay, well, a fomite is an object like a doorknob or a mask or anything that harbors pathogens, that distributes pathogens in the normal definition. And I say mask, take it a step further, because it's attached to your respiratory system. And as the Duke study showed last August, masks actually create aerosols, and as masks are often required in stores and will be again, I expect, more broadly across the country, the aerosols stay in the air up to an hour. So I submit that one step further, that masks are already also superior receptors of aerosolized pathogens.
So what you're telling me, what you're telling me, William, is that masks are going to make matters worse. Of course, you're 100% correct about that. I have probably a dozen studies on my blog at jamesfetzer.org that masks are very harmful. Even the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons does not support wearing masks, and they are the leading professional medical scientific organization in the United States. So I could not agree more, Bill. Go ahead.
Well, can I submit one more thought?
Of course.
Quickly. One more thought quickly. That the masks, as a fomite, masks are perfect because they act as a petri dish on your face, right? So anything that's being in the vaccines and virally shed that gets aerosolized in calm environments is going to be spread around and cross-pollinating, so to speak, cross-fermenting. And that's yeah. I just wanted to get that idea out there. The masks are a low-tech yeah. bioweapon distribution system.
Well, I didn't talk about Tony the Rat, as I refer to Anthony Fauci, who's going to be responsible for more mass murder than all of our foreign enemies in history combined, Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, Emperor Hirohito, who's been on all sides of these issues. He initially said masks are irrelevant, don't wear them. Later he came out for masks. We know masks are dangerous. You're recycling oxygen-depleted air. That kills your brain cells. Unlike your other cells, your skin cells, for example, brain cells do not regenerate. We expect that even just from wearing masks, there's going to be an increase in dementia in the American population. And for young people especially, to wear masks when competing in athletic events, for example, is an absurdity. It's a crime against these children, and it's outrageous. So I'm very glad, William, you called in with those additional thoughts. And as I say, you can find much more on my blog at jamesvetzer.org about masks. Meanwhile, we also have another caller from the East Coast, Scaredy Cat. Scaredy, join the conversation.
Hi, Jim and Paul and William. So it's a really good idea towards the beginning of your discussion, Jim, for good guys to replace bad guys, because the bad guys have totally glued their behinds to the seats of power, and especially this being the power hour, and they're glued there to rule over us. So I just am mentioning three quick names. One is, I've forgotten his name, actually, so maybe you can help me, Jim. From your Raw Deal show 3 days ago on Friday, you had your guest Bob Patterson, who described a gentleman who's going to try against Newsom for the governor yeah. of California. And, of course, Newsom is so gung-ho to lock down people, in fact, lock out people from their own lives and demolish their lives. Of course, him being what I call a demolishocrat. And if you could mention his name, for governor of California, which you were talking about earlier. Second name is Diane Sayre, S as in sunshine, A-R-E, and she also wants to replace another demolishocrat. That is the decades-long glued Senate seat of New York of Chuck Schumer. She says that it's going to be a very uphill battle. She needs 15,000 signatures, I guess, because she's a newcomer and I guess not a party member. And so she says she's going to get a camera and get a friend, and she's going to have fun. But I think we should also look into somehow helping her. And then the third name is Brenda Lebsack. L-E-B like Lebanon, and then sack like sad sack, although she's a very happy sack. Brenda Lebsack, she is not a politician. She's a 20-year-old career years. Not that she's 20 years old. She's a mature lady, but 20 years career teacher fighting against the pornographic curriculum for toddlers. And she does have a website, which I've forgotten, but she just said you can do a search engine for her. And although we ourselves, it's too tough, like, to go after the governor's seat or the or a Senate seat, we can go to our local school board or the curriculum office. Just show up at the local school, high school, elementary school, school district office, and do something. Figure out if we can replace a position so that we can get something back for decency of the teaching of our children. And I'm muddled for the rest of it, so go ahead.
Scaredy, thanks for all those contributions. Paul out in California, who himself is running, may want to add to this. Paul, give us some further thoughts of yours about what's going on in California.
You know, I just gotta chuckle a little bit. I mean, I know that Scaredy is trying to be entertaining and a little bit humorous, and, you know, she's mildly successful in that. But if this last election taught us anything, it's that elections don't matter. So, you know,
no, you
my prediction
you don't
is...
Even, do you think there's going to be a successful recall in California or no? I mean, I certainly...
Well, you know,
they'll shuffle
somebody else on the stage, okay? But as long as these people have power, you know, they're going to make sure that it doesn't matter. Here's my new prediction. I used to talk about, you know, Joe Biden not lasting long and we're going to get Kamala Harris. I'm not so sure now. I think I'm going to revise it. I think they're going to bring back the Donald. We're going to have the big Trump drama again, and it'll still be the Joe Biden imposter running against Trump, and he will defeat Trump again, and we'll have two terms of the Joe Biden imposter. What do you think about that? We got to have some sort of figure out some odds for our bet on that one, huh?
I don't think there's any chance whatsoever of that happening, Paul, but it's interesting you suggest it.
You can give me long odds then.
Let me go back to William in Vermont. William, if you're still here, do you have further thoughts you'd like to add?
You know, I just wanted to get this idea out about fomites and that the masks are propagating disease.
These are most certain. They're most certainly damaging, and of course they're so coarse they can't possibly filter out any viruses. So they've really become a function of virtue signaling by wearing a mask. You're supposed to show you're a good citizen and supporting to the benefit of the nation, not realizing you're actually harming yourself and others that you may be imposing masks upon. Even here in Madison, Wisconsin, in Dane County, where I reside, which is an ultra-liberal enclave, they have abandoned the mask requirements. And I'm very pleased to say now, when I go around maskless, I don't feel like I'm the odd man out because most others are no longer wearing masks. You may, if you want to, of course, if you prefer to, but you're not obligated. Scaredy, come back with more thoughts of yours.
Okay, Jim, I do agree with Paul in that the row or line of bad guys is absolutely like hundreds of dominoes in reverse. So if you knock one out, so say we are successful in getting the Newsom out, so dominoes in reverse, another one will pop up, and there's another bad guy will pop up to take the position. And because bad guys, occupy the judges' seats also, et cetera, et cetera. However, we can do something, at least a tiny small thing, just show up at a parent-teacher meeting. Just locally, just in your neighborhood, the neighborhood school, and also start pushing for how can we get money back into, you know, actual parents' pockets to pay for homeschooling. That is, there are plenty of talented people, engineers, artists, mathematicians, retired, who would love to, give them sense of happiness of working with the young kids to actually teach them some real subjects which are not being done in school, because I've been a substitute teacher for quite a few years, and there's total, out of a 40-minute classroom, there might be 2 minutes of a lesson. The rest of the time, the students have become so lax. They just run around the class, shout at the teachers, and nothing gets done. I know a woman who pays $9,000 in school tax, which is going to fund this chaos upon our children in the schools, going to the administrators and teachers' pockets, compared to $2,000 for her county tax and $1,500 for the entire borough, you know, street sweeping, snow sweeping, all those tax. And $9,000 is a lot of money. It's, you know, almost five times the other taxes, which obviously the municipality needs for keep repairing the roads, etc. So how can we get this money, which all these houses and families are losing, even if they homeschool their kids? We need to put the money back in parents' and families' pockets so that they can then pay a good artist to come to their house, a musician, a chemistry professor, retired, etc., history professor, and pay them a good, you know, $50 or something for an hour a week.
Scaredy, wonderful, wonderful having you here. I'm so glad you and Paul in California and William in Vermont called in. I want to thank the Power Hour for having featuring me again to sit in. I love Joyce Riley, and I'm a huge fan of the Power Hour Nation, and I look forward to our next encounter. Thank you all very much for joining today. Thank you for listening.
But what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.